Community Conversations with Community Centres SA. Here's Kerry Ackermans.
Today on the Community Conversations podcast, we'll be talking to Claire Johnson, founder of Advocate 360. It's a dedicated government relations and communications service tailored for member-based organisations, peak bodies and advocacy groups. They'll help you deliver submissions, reports, stakeholder content and strategy with fast turnaround. Advocacy is a difficult and challenging area, and having some expert help from Claire will give us some tips. We would like to apologise for the quality on the phone line, but today's chat is well worthwhile to listen to. Claire, I was very excited to do this today because I think that advocacy is an area that for community centres in particular, they are so undervalued and they really need to get their voices heard. So your organisation, what you do, and general talk about advocacy will be really important for our sector. So Claire, just talk to me about your background. How did you get into advocacy?
So I have been in this sector, in the advocacy space for well over a decade now. I used to work in the government. I've worked at both state and federal level in policy advisory. And then I made the jump out of government and moved into the private sector and worked in government relations in the automotive sector. And it was a really interesting time because it was just the very tail end of manufacturing vehicles in Australia. I worked for Toyota, so the company was in the fight of its life, trying to maintain a local manufacturing presence in Melbourne at the time. And I was really at the coalface, engaging with government directly, trying to secure ongoing support and funding to keep the sector going. And that's when I really fell in love with government engagement and government relations and really understood how to do it well, especially when the stakes are high. I've always enjoyed the transport sector. So obviously we weren't successful in that instance to keep manufacturing continuing. But I did stay in transport and I started an industry association called the Australian Hydrogen Council, where we actually advocated for hydrogen-powered transport as well as other applications for hydrogen. The role was pure advocacy. I was a single-person CEO in that organisation, as many industry associations are, and it's extremely difficult to engage with government, to get your issues heard, to stay relevant, and to actually get some good policy outcomes. So I did that for a few years, and really my current consultancy, Advocate 360, was born out of some of the challenges that I experienced being an advocate on behalf of an industry and just not having that support that you need to do it well. So at the moment, I work with clients who are industry bodies and corporate government relations teams to really be their behind-the-scenes support to help them in their advocacy efforts to get them the outcomes that they wish to achieve on behalf of their organisation.
Claire, let's talk to those challenges because the community sector is diverse, fragmented, dealing with complex issues and has multiple stakeholders. So very challenging from an advocacy perspective.
It is extremely difficult. You cannot keep all of your stakeholders happy. It is near impossible, even though there's an expectation that you should. But obviously consensus building and those sorts of environments is really critical. You want your members, in the case of industry bodies, to really feel that they're on the journey with you and that their views are represented, because that's why they're a member of your organisation in the first instance. So really building a solid consensus among your membership base is really critical as a starting point before you start engaging with government. That's really step one. It's understanding your members' businesses, organisations, mindsets, challenges and problems, and really using those to develop a policy platform that really speaks to the priorities of your members. The next challenge then is communicating that policy platform effectively into government. It's extremely difficult too. So identifying who your key stakeholders are, what their priorities are, how to shape your narrative, position yourself. Even gaining access can be incredibly difficult to government stakeholders as well. And the organisations that we're talking about are also time poor. Sometimes they're running with very minimal budgets. They're not well resourced. So it is extremely difficult, but there are ways to do it well. You just have to get creative.
And Claire, of course, we have the state level, we have the federal level, we have government, we have the opposition, and now, of course, many independents. So that makes it even more challenging.
Yes, it's a diverse range of stakeholders with very different motivations and agendas. And sometimes policy issues, you know, they're not clear. They might touch on, they might be relevant at the state level, but there also may be some decision-making power at the federal level. So really, step one is mapping out your stakeholders. You really need to do some detailed stakeholder mapping to understand not only who the direct decision makers are, but who influences those decisions. And it's not just within the government itself or within amongst parliamentarians or bureaucrats. It's also looking at who are the partners, who are the complementary industry bodies or coalitions that you can join and you can participate in. And that's really for those organisations who have very minimal resources. Really, a partnership model is critical to really be able to leverage the resources of other groups, the other organisations, and partnering together and developing a joint strategy where you have mutual interests. So, for instance, I'm still working in the hydrogen transport space. I have three clients at the moment who felt that hydrogen transport didn't have a natural home in terms of the industry associations that are in the transport and hydrogen space. So I've helped them form a coalition. Currently it's three brands, but they're high-profile brands. They're multinationals. Everyone would know these brands. So they're utilising their brand recognition to form this coalition and really to gain them greater access into government and to also show the government that they're serious about this particular product, in this instance, that they're investing in. So they're really leveraging the power of each of their respective brands to do that and hopefully do that effectively. It's a relatively new group, but I would recommend that any industry body or community group tries to do the same, harness the brand power or the recognition of other groups and form industry coalitions where they make sense. It's really a way of maximising your advocacy effectiveness.
And does that speak to the fact, Claire, as well, that government really only wants to talk to one voice here, one pitch about one succinct cause that they will feel and resonate with their voters, rather than across the platform, which is why forming a partnership or going through an industry body has so much value?
Yeah, it does. That's right. So ideally, your industry body has very good relationships with government. It's critical that they maintain positive relationships with both sides of government, and the independence, as you touched on, obviously the relevance of the crossbench is always increasing. So that's really critical, but it's not always possible. So I do have clients who are industry associations that are operating in the sector with industry associations that always also represent similar members. And so generally positions can diverge between them. They're somewhat nuanced or minor differences, but nevertheless, there is sometimes frustration at the ministerial level that they can't get a single one-voice position on some of the issues that they're working through and policies that they're trying to develop. And so, look, in some instances, it's impossible to achieve complete alignment on particular issues across every industry body or the organisations within that sector. But you know, where it is possible, it's really critical because it would be far more powerful. And the ministry itself, the ministers that you're dealing with, will give that greater weight when they can see that it's consensus across the sector, and they'll be more likely to make policy change. So where you can arrive at a consensus position across your industry, it's really important to do so because that's where you're going to see the greatest result.
So presumably, then you need a document to speak to. Is that the next step, Claire?
Yes, you do. So we work with our clients on developing the documentation that they can present to government. Obviously, there's a particular style in terms of writing for a government audience. You also need to be very conscious of government priorities in drafting those documents. Now, we've seen Albanese just announce a roundtable focused on Australia's lagging productivity and economic growth. So that's obviously a really high focus area at the moment for the current government. So any sort of documents that any community group or industry body or corporate is drafting should really keep that particular agenda front of mind, being productivity, where it makes sense. So we prepare those documents. One really effective document that I advise any community group or industry association to draft is an election blueprint. Obviously, we've just had an election, so that opportunity to draft one for the federal government has just passed. But nevertheless, those election blueprints can also be done for state governments. And they really set out your full policy platform in a really succinct, clear, punchy document that's well designed. And I've had clients that I've helped to distribute those documents. So we've printed them and we've sent them to every MP and senator at the federal level. And obviously, as part of sending those documents, always request a meeting. It's, you know, really critical. You send the document, you request a meeting, and you follow up, and you follow up, and you follow up again. So that really gets the conversation moving and puts in writing what your policies are, what your policy platform is, and hopefully also gets you some face time with your decision makers as well. So definitely recommend an election blueprint for any organisation. The other one that we help our clients with is infographics. So you've secured the meeting with government, with a minister, say, you know, it's a really great meeting. There's interest there in, you know, understanding your problems and priorities, but you need some kind of handout, some kind of leave behind. Otherwise, what you've discussed can easily be forgotten. So infographics that visualise your industry and the challenges that you're facing are really important. And then, of course, there's your other documents like correspondence and submissions. All of them are really valuable opportunities to engage with government and should be done as well as possible.
So we have the meeting. What then?
So the meeting is just the first step. Obviously, securing the meeting itself, it can be extremely difficult depending on the minister.
Any tips, Claire?
persistence, I would say.
Sit outside their office. What's the plan?
Whatever works. Obviously, maintaining relationships with advisors is really critical. Unfortunately, with every election, advisors can change. Hopefully, the advisors that you have relationships with stay with their minister. But if not, you need to re-establish new relationships with those advisors. That's really, really important. So you have secured the meeting. It's gone extremely well. You've prepared your talking points and you stuck to those. Leave behinds are really advisable. But then you have to do the follow-up. So you do need to draft a letter to them outlining the conversation that took place in that meeting and reminding of the key points, and also including some follow-up actions as well. So whether that might be requesting another meeting, whether you're committed to provide them with some research, whatever that might look like, and make sure you follow up with those things. Obviously, always get contacts for the advisors as well, because that will be your key window into the minister's office. So make sure you have all those contact details. And you also want to understand who the key contacts are at the bureaucratic level. So who should you be talking to in the department? That will obviously be drafting the policy itself. And then, yeah, just follow up and follow up again. Unfortunately, it's just the way it goes.
I'm talking to Claire Johnson, Advocate 360 founder. Claire, this is just such great information for the sector and for our community centre members. What concerns me is that there is so much to advocate about because the sector is so big. We were talking about homelessness, food security, disability, marginalised groups being engaged in the community. Community centres are just a catch-all for everything that happens to communities. How do you peel that away and come down to something succinctly that the government will listen to?
It's extremely difficult, but you have to prioritise. Otherwise, you will dilute your message and you won't be able to funnel your efforts into something that actually has a high probability of succeeding. So my members, I always advise to pick 2 to 3 priority issues over any 12-month period, because anything more than that is too difficult. Even if you have a well-resourced government relations team, you'll just stretch them too thin. So as much as it's difficult, particularly when you're talking about really big issues that need to be addressed, it's extremely difficult to prioritise some of the issues that you touch on because they're all critically important, but you really need to do your best job at prioritising 2 to 3. And to prioritise those, I'll be looking at the current government priorities to understand exactly where they want to focus on in their term of government. If there's any programs as well that are new, emerging, have funding attached to them that you can potentially leverage as well to achieve what you intend to achieve in terms of those priority areas. And also, as I touched on before, where can you form coalitions? So let's say it is homelessness is your priority issue that you want to address in that sort of 1 year period ahead. What are the complementary organisations that you can work with? And breaking that down, like what actual aspects of homelessness have the highest possibility of achieving something with government, whether it be additional funding support or greater focus, or what does that look like? So you really have to prioritise what your issues are, or risk achieving very little, sadly.
And Claire, would it be fair to say that for a lot of sectors, and particularly, I'll say the community sector, they would all say they're underfunded and they need more money, but that's not something to go in and advocate on, is it?
Oh, I think so. I talk to some of my clients and they're quite sometimes they're hesitant to request money or participate in grant rounds. I personally don't understand that. I think where there's government grants that are available or there's an opportunity to ask for funding support and you're doing valuable work that deserves to be supported, then you should ask for that. And obviously the extension of that is becoming really proficient at drafting a great grant application. So no one enjoys writing grant applications. They're generally quite a painful process and can be quite long and difficult to compile all the information that governments require. But it's a really, really valuable skill set that every community organisation should be building internally. And if they don't have the capacity to build it internally, then engage an external consultant to draft that on your behalf who understands the language of government, understands the government's priorities, know how to position your program or project to maximise your chances of success. It is extremely difficult for community organisations as they're generally underfunded across the board, but being really proactive and keeping a really close eye on the government grant opportunities is really important, and taking any opportunity with a minister or a department head to talk about your funding challenges. You just don't know what opportunities might be out there that you're yet to uncover that a single conversation could reveal.
I'm talking to Claire Johnson, founder of Advocate 360. And Claire, that was really the point of my question. It's not just about programs and grants. I totally agree with you, and I think you can get more hearing if you're going after a program or a project, specifically if that's tied to a grant funding to it. And I know myself, if you speak to government and say, look, we just need more money, they will say there's nothing in the budget. There isn't any more money. It's that type of language rather than, as you were saying, tie it to a priority, put it around a key issue that the government has on their agenda.
Yes, and look, you're completely right. Of course, if you go in with a general, our organisation needs more funding, it's not solutions oriented. And
no,
that's probably the most important point, that any engagement with government needs to be solutions oriented. You need to come to them with a proposal or something formulated that actually allows them to consider whether it has merit. And so if there are no grant programs that nicely fit within criteria that fit your needs, or you believe your organisation is ineligible, but you have a very specific project or program that you believe will have a significant benefit to the jurisdiction that you're delivering that project or program, then definitely you do need to present that to government. Just because it doesn't neatly fit within the criteria doesn't mean that you should give up on it. And having those relationships, you know, with a ministerial advisor or with a bureaucrat within your relevant department, you can build that relationship over time where you talk to them about, oh, look, we're formulating this, we think it's going to achieve this, but there's no grants available at the moment, or it doesn't fit within the criteria of this grant, but we think that you should look at this more closely because it can still achieve an outcome that you're looking to achieve. It's really difficult to get money out of government, but it can be done when you frame it in a way that solves their problem. So I think that's really the number one piece of advice, is think in the mind of a bureaucrat or a minister and position your project or program accordingly.
I love that. Can we talk about how to reach them then, Claire? As you said, thinking from the government's perspective, I would imagine their concern is, well, how many voters, how many people, how much the general public are we going to reach, or are we going to help with this program? So it actually goes across centres, across the sector, rather than just a specific centre trying to get that hearing. And I presume that would have a greater weight from a government's perspective.
Oh, yeah. Look, anything that obviously you want to understand, if we're talking about ministers here or any MP, you want to understand their electorate. So how much of a margin do they sit on in their seat? Are they comfortable? Are they uncomfortable? What are their drivers? What do they actually campaign on during their election campaigning? Really understand, you know, go on the APH website and look at their hobbies and interests. What portfolios have they held before? What committees are they a part of? There's certainly areas that you can tap into to create a connection with your local MP or the minister that you're engaging with, and trying to really pitch them something that ticks their boxes in terms of what they're trying to achieve. Obviously, in this instance here, we're talking about potentially programs that span outside of their electorate, so it may not be electorate-based. But if it's a state minister, for instance, obviously leading with how can it benefit their electorate, but how can it benefit their colleagues as well, who may similarly be in that area that particular program might benefit. So unfortunately, or fortunately, depends on how you see it, everything is politicised in this world. Even, you know, great work that's delivered by community organisations. It means that you need to think in the mind of a politician at times and think about what resonates with them and sort of shape your narrative accordingly.
And Claire, as you would be aware, social impact is very difficult to quantify. One of the frustrations of the sector is that when they're seeking funding, particularly for specific grants, it's all tied around numbers. And yet you can do fabulous work and have a huge social impact on a small amount. It's all tied around numbers. What's a way to address that?
Well, look, numbers are important, but I actually find that when engaging with ministers and their officers, it's more about hearts and minds. They're presented with numbers and, you know, modelling and forecasts, and every sector has had their time where they, you know, modelled out the economic benefit of their industry. And the government becomes saturated in data, so a lot of it does lose its impact. So how much merit and weight a lot of this data is given, you know, it's obviously questionable at times. At the same time, while obviously data is important in developing any proposal to show impact, government needs to see that, especially at the bureaucratic level, there is an aspect of capturing hearts and minds by pulling at the heartstrings, creating that emotional connection, talking about, you know, the individuals that you've assisted, the lives that you've been able to change, case studies and images and things that make whatever you're delivering as real as possible. Particularly if there is some way that you can form that connection with that particular minister in this instance. Are they involved in charity work? Are there charities that they're affiliated with and that they support? Are there particular issues that are important to them? So I think capturing the hearts and minds of decision makers is important too. It doesn't discount the need to have data, unfortunately, which can be frustrating when the data doesn't show the incredible work you're actually delivering. But I think also having, creating that emotional tie, that connection that a decision maker can kind of connect to is also really important.
Yes, of course. And also, Claire, I just wanted to talk about, if we look at a key specific issue and say, well, is it mental health, for example? Now, everyone is looking at mental health. Every sector is seeking funding. There's a lot of money being given out around mental health. It's a very competitive environment. How do you position yourself to stand out?
It is very competitive, and you know, mental health obviously is very broad as well. So you need to understand exactly what your niche is. What is your point of differentiation versus other organisations that are looking for funding in that area? What are you good at? What are your strengths? What are your competitive advantages? And you really need to find that point of differentiation, because they are your most important selling points. You know, it is all about creating your USP, your unique, you know, selling points, and being able to not only find them, but really effectively communicating those. So ensuring that the way that you talk to government is, it's obviously clear and impactful and powerful, but it's also really well, really nicely presented. So in terms of the clients that I work with, we obviously shape the narrative on their behalf. We do a lot of content drafting on their behalf, but it's also the look and feel as well. So any sort of documentation that you're presenting to government, you know, it needs to stand out in terms of the aesthetic of it. So are you using like beautiful images? Are you making sure that, you know, perhaps it's a PowerPoint deck? Is it really well put together and professional and just has a great look and feel about it to make an impact? Now, I know this might sound superficial in some regards, but all these little things really count when you're trying to differentiate yourself, especially in a grant round, when you're up against, you know, 20 other organisations, if not more, especially in mental health, as you touch on. You really need to find that way to stand out. And I believe that doing that is obviously finding your competitive advantage, but also presenting yourself in the best possible way.
So let's look at lived experience, for example, which is across the sector a very common way to demonstrate how anyone is having an impact with their program. So how is video being perceived these days? Could you do like a Vox Pop? Could you get a testimonial? Or can you share that lived experience story?
The only challenge is that these decision makers are obviously time poor. So the likelihood of a minister's office that they'll watch video content is probably quite low. However, in the bureaucracy in the department that considering the applications and actually doing the evaluation, then yes, video content will be consumed and is a way of standing out. Obviously, visualization is another one. So the use of infographics, for instance, to really visually map out your service or your program and how it's delivered and what its benefits are is another one. And then there's all the supporting communications as well. So are you active on social media? You know, LinkedIn is really the best platform for connecting with government decision makers. Are you producing engaging content? Is it educational content? Is it regular content to begin with? So also thinking about more broadly your communications channels. Is your website regularly updated too? You know, decision makers, they will go and look at these platforms. So they need to be maintained, they need to be relevant, they need to be fresh. So really thinking about your organisation, how are you positioning yourself publicly and making sure that you're really putting your best foot forward.
So Claire, there's some great tips here and advice, but obviously it's a very complex piece. So tell us about your services, Advocate 360. How do people procure those and how does that work?
Yes, so we are a consultancy working with industry associations, community groups and government and corporate government relations teams. And we provide, as I mentioned before, the behind-the-scenes support to really help those organisations effectively engage with government. So that might be things such as helping them prepare talking points for an upcoming meeting, helping them prepare a handout that they can leave behind at those meetings. We also develop government engagement strategies, which includes things like stakeholder mapping, so helping them identify who the key decision makers are, and then doing some of the longer form materials too, like writing submissions, preparing grant applications. There's a huge amount that goes into cultivating relationships with government. And my philosophy is that those organisations, they need to be the face of. They need to be the ones who are talking directly with government, but they need support to help them with all of the materials and strategy and initiatives that, to help them to obviously maximise those opportunities.
So how do you cost those services, Claire?
Yeah, so we operate, so we're very flexible. We have clients of all sizes. So we range from hourly rate basis for those who want to use us on an ad hoc arrangement to retainers. So we have some clients that engage us on a monthly retainer, and then we deliver a certain number of hours based on that level of retainer. So we're very flexible and open to working with organisations of all sizes, however they need to structure an engagement with us.
Of course. So how do people find you, Claire?
Yes, thanks, Kerry. So our website is advocate360.com.au, or they can find us on LinkedIn as well. Feel free to reach out via those channels, and certainly be happy to have a chat about how we can support.
Thank you for your participation today, Claire. This is a fascinating topic. I think I could have asked you questions for at least another hour, and I really do hope that centres look up your site. But as a peak body, CCSA, we definitely talk to you further about how we can better advocate for the sector. So thank you for joining us today on Community Conversations.
Thank you, Kerry. It's been lovely. Thank you very much.
On behalf of all the Community Centres SA teams, thanks for listening. Feel free to get in touch with us at communitycentressa.asn.au. We'll be back next week. But wherever you are, at home, with your work and in your daily life, we hope that we have planted a seed to enable ongoing community conversations.
Community Conversations. For more information, check out communitycentressa.asn.au.